Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families. And we have got just that on the agenda for today. My guest is Ketrick Newell. He burst into the world and onto the ministry scene with a vivacity that is truly God-given. In school, Ketrick's teachers thought he had a hearing problem because he was so loud. But it turned out that Ketrick was just overloaded with energy and expression, and he has learned to use that expression to share the love of Christ to young people across the nation. He is the author of, okay, are you ready for this? I told Ketrick I was going to try to say it without laughing, but I'm giving up right now. He is the author of a book called Liar, Liar, Mullet on Fire. Yes, you heard that right. And he loves ministering to students and 20-somethings at retreats and camps and conferences, and recently has been part of Girls of Grace, an event for teen girls. Many of you may have heard of that or even been to that. And he is currently the student pastor at Cross Point Church in Nashville, where he serves alongside his wife, Ashley. And it is evident from the moment you meet Ketrick, he has a strong passion for ministering to men and women of all ages. And today we have him right here on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show. So Ketrick, so glad to have you. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, I can't wait to dive into this conversation. So don't worry, listeners. We're going to get to the liar, liar, mullet on fire. But Ketrick, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your testimony and your call to ministry, just how God called you into this work.
So I wasn't raised in church. So really what happened is the second time to ever step foot in church, how I got there was seventh grade. I was in my English class, and there was a really cute girl, and she invited me to go to youth group, and I thought that meant a date. So I was like, all right, it's a date. She didn't know it. I didn't know it. Or I knew it. She didn't know it. And so I went to the youth group, and I came to find out that night about they were going on a retreat, and all I heard was go-karts. And so I asked her, I turned to her, so are you going? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, all right, date two. And so I went on the spring break retreat. And it was on the spring break retreat, second night, that they did worship. And at the end, someone gave the gospel. And that is when I realized I was lost. I had no idea I was lost. The only thing I really knew about God is that you believe in God because that's what good people do. And I had no idea of what Jesus did on the cross for me. So it was in that moment that I raised my hand, went back to this little weird room off to the side that had green carpet. And me and another girl named Julie Holloway had a follow-up conversation with the youth pastor, and that's where we gave our life to Jesus.
That's absolutely amazing. I mean, really, any good testimony starts with cute girls in the youth group and go-karts. I mean, there is a place for youth ministry, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because Ketrick, you and I share that in common. On my husband and I's first date, I had asked him if he was a Christian, and he told me he wasn't sure exactly what that meant. And I thought, okay, well, that's a no. And so I let him, he wanted to pray right then and there. And I thought, man, this guy really wants a date. And he said, okay, well, I prayed, you know, can we go on another date? And I said, no, but you can come to church with me if you want. And let me tell you, he beat the cleaning crew there. Like, he was there before the doors were even unlocked, and the rest was really history. But, you know, my listeners know, Ketrick, that I really, really love Christmas. And one of the things that I do like about Christmas, I mean, it's not one of my prouder moments, but I do love those little Debbie Christmas trees. I get all excited when they come out, and I haven't had one now, you know, since probably July, because yes, I did keep a box in my freezer. But you actually, part of your story is connected to little Debbie. So I really would be remiss if I did not ask you to share that with us.
Yeah. So when I was 21, I was lived in Oklahoma, going to a University of Central Oklahoma in Edmond. And that is where I was doing college. I went to a Passion Conference in Nashville at that time. And what what ended up happening is I felt in the service that I was about to move. And I didn't understand what that meant. I could just feel it just like a, you know, a nudge that I'm about to move. And I didn't know what it meant. And the next morning, I'm driving back from Nashville to Oklahoma, and I get a phone call from my dad. And he said, hey, I just got out of the doctor's office. And he said, I have cancer. And in that moment, I felt like the Lord was like, that's what I was saying. You're about to move. And in that moment, what I just felt like I was supposed to do is to move home to Durant, Oklahoma, where my dad is a Little Debbie man, or was a Little Debbie man. And I got to work his route. And so I was able to go and be a Little Debbie man, selling oatmeal cream pies, zebra cakes, you know, all the things. It was amazing. And I got to do that for a short season while he was going through all the stuff with cancer. Now, my dad's cancer-free. He's awesome. He's not a Little Debbie man anymore. He's retired. But that is something that I got to do a lot of. And I can lick the stripes off some zebra cakes, that's for sure.
Well, that is really amazing, Ketrick. I don't think it's very common to hear young people who would be willing to drop everything and do that. But knowing the voice of God in your life is so important. And once you hear it, you know it. And I really want to know how all of that came to this book. I'm looking at the cover of the book and your picture is just precious. Like, I'm seeing, you know, the missing teeth and this little, like, you are rocking the mullet. It's
only a mother could love, right?
No, it is absolutely cute. Anybody who looks at this picture is just going to think this is the most precious little guy ever. And his liar, mullet on fire, extinguishing lies we believe with God's trucks at truth. So tell us, of course, about your book and, of course, about your mullet. Do you still have it?
I don't anymore. Okay. No, I don't have it. I had it for way too long. It was in at some point.
It's back now.
You know, back in, it's back again. I should have kept it all these years. But yeah, my mom decided to perm the mullet before my first grade picture. So that's,
she did
that's
not.
Just not any mullet. That's a permed mullet. So
I can see it now. That is love and care right there, to perm a mullet. I love it.
That's right. Well, and then we went through the stages of, then you drew the lines in the head, you know, on the side of the head, like the little stripes. And then I would even take a marker and color them into the outfit I was wearing for the day. Like, I was ahead of the curve on all of this. And so I eventually got rid of the mullet by seventh grade. So I had that thing from first grade all the way to seventh grade. And it was Billy Ray Cyrus looking by the time seventh grade came around. It was long.
Well, you know, we're digressing here, but we have to give a moment for the mullet, because my husband actually had a mullet too in high school, and now he doesn't have any hair. He went bald very early and has been rocking the bald head for a long time. But it was funny because I don't have a lot of my wedding pictures out. Like, long story short, but anyway, we don't have them. And one day, my son, who was pretty young, he found this album. He was looking through it, and he got all teary and said, "Why didn't you tell me you were married before?" And I said, "Because I wasn't." And he said, "No, I have this album. Look at, who is this guy?" I'm like, "That is your dad." He's like, "No, the guy with the mullet, the guy with the hair." I'm like, "That is your dad." He just had never known him with that. But anyway, okay, we are really talking, we have digressed, but I don't regret it. But let's talk about the lies that, really, this book is about extinguishing lies we believe with God's truth. How have you found that to be true in your own life? And now, how do you share that message with young people?
Well, I think all of us know that if we believe a lie as a truth, it will begin to affect our life as if it's true. And that happens so much, is that we pick up things along the way. And the Bible doesn't tell us that our opinions will set us free. It doesn't tell us our past will set us free. It doesn't tell us that just what the lady down the street says will set us free. Now, obviously, people, if they know truth and they speak truth, it can change your life. But it says that it's His truth that sets us free. But a lot of us, if we don't spend time actually thinking about what's coming into our own minds and checking it at the door with God to say, is this true? A lot of times we can begin to walk out things that we were never intended to walk out. And so if we believe that lie as a truth, it will start to make an effect in our life as if it's true. And none of us are exempt from that. And so a lot of us can walk around life being deceived, not knowing it, right? Because deception is you know, is why it's called deception, is because you don't know that it's a lie, but we can begin to live out of that lie and it begin to have an effect on our lives.
I see young people doing this every day. Every day they are doing this. They are adopting lies about themselves. And honestly, Ketrick, the truth just seems like it's always changing. And we hear phrases like speak your truth or own your truth. And just that truth that today, that's celebrated today, could get you canceled tomorrow. And I see this causing a generation of really deeply anxious kids. And if they don't have the solid foundation that is God's truth that never changes, I really think that's part of what's contributing to the anxiety today. But sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead and take it from there.
No, I think when we come, we first have to trust, you know, when you trust someone, you trust their word. You trust what they say to you when they're trustworthy. And I think what a lot of times happens is that we things happen in life and we begin to put God's name on things or that God did certain things. And in that, the biggest job for the enemy is to get us disconnected from God, to get us distant from God, because distance creates distortion. And if we can get distant from God, then the enemy wins, because we won't trust God and take him that he has our best interest in mind. And I think that that happens so much in our lives, whether we get disappointed because something didn't go the way that we planned. And then what we do is we find ourselves so far away from God that then we believe that we can be the answer or have the answers to know what truth is. And I know in my own life, and I'm sure you can say the same, that when I have gone out on a limb and co-signed something that God never signed first, it doesn't normally go bad. Our job, I mean, it does go bad. It's not my job.
Yeah.
It's not my job to co-sign something and ask God to sign it. It's God, what are you already in? I don't need to ask you to bless something. You're already blessing what you're in. So God, you tell me. I'm not the signer and you're the co-signer. You're actually the signer and I'm the co-signer of what you're wanting my life to look like. And I think a lot of times we can get so confused because we get mistrust and from that we don't believe that God has the best intentions for our life.
Well, you just said something that caught my attention. You said distance creates distortion. I think there is a lot of truth to that, because that is one of the biggest tools of the enemy. It's just not anything that's outright outrageous. Like, you know, it's not like, I don't see kids that, you know, are just happy, well-adjusted kids who all of a sudden overnight, you know, decide they have anxiety or depression or engage in significant risk-taking behaviors. It always happens like little by little. And in this generation, what I see is a generation of kids who are very digitally connected, but relationally disconnected. And what they are doing is they're having distance from the real people in their lives. I'm seeing so many parents and grandparents who are saying, I don't know how to get my kid to get their face out of their phone, to get them to really talk to me. I feel like I don't know what's going on. And I see distance in those relationships, and parents who want to connect and kids who want to talk about it, but it is very difficult to do that. And it is ironic, because we're living in a world that is so digitally connected. They have all of these connections, but Ketrick, a lot of those are not real. They're with people they don't really know, who aren't in their community, who aren't invested in their life. It's just an echo chamber. And one of the things that you do in your ministry is you really encourage and value mentorship, and you help those kids encourage them to seek support and help from others, whether that's a pastor or a mentor or a parent or another trusted individual. So we're going into a break, but when we come back, I want to dive into that, because I think there is a misconception by people who want to mentor, thinking, oh, these kids aren't interested. And they are. They just don't know how to say, oh yes, will you please mentor me? So when we come back, let's talk about how you find success in that and what you would say to the adults who are listening about how they can invest in the next generation. We're talking with Ketrick Newell, and we'll talk more when we come back on the other side of this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
We worship the God who was. We worship the God who is. We worship the God who evermore will be. He opened the prison doors. He parted the raging sea. My God, He holds the victory.
Welcome back, friends. There is joy in the house of the Lord today, and there is joy on this show. We are talking to Ketrick Newell, a youth pastor who wrote a book called Liar, Liar, Mullet on Fire. How can you not find joy in that book? And we're talking, if you missed the first segment, you missed the moment for the mullet. So you may want to go back and have that, because I know that can spark such intense debates. We have moms who are saying, no, don't bring the mullet back. And some saying, I love the mullet. But okay, we digress. I've spent way too much time on that. But what we were really talking about that matters was mentorship and this generation of kids who do not see absolute truth, some of them, and they are deeply anxious and they need connection. So Ketrick, I'm going to give it back to you and talk to us about mentorship. What is the importance of investing in the next generation to help them replace the lies that they believe about themselves and about the world with God's truth?
Yeah, so actually, out of being a youth pastor, what happened was at Crosspoint was our main location moved down to the highest crime rate, highest poverty rate in Nashville, and I started hanging out with kids in like really low income schools. I started going to this lunchroom at Maplewood High School, started hanging out with these kids and get to know their stories. And what happened through that process is I began to meet these kids in the lunchroom. Man, love your J's. Good to meet you. Good to see you. And all of a sudden, within 9 months of my student ministry, our student ministry became like 98% inner city. And it was crazy awesome. But as I got to know these kids' stories, and this doesn't just relate to inner city kids, I think it's this generation that you've been talking about, that we're so connected, but there's no real connection. We're so mm-hmm. connected online, but there's yep. no connection interpersonally. Mm-hmm. And with the inner city kids, as I began to hear their stories and get to know them, a majority of those kids were fatherless. And I said, Lord, if you would show me, I've never done this before, but I would love to put mentors in the lives of these kids to help them know the love, that they could say two things. I have a family outside of my family and someone that cares about me and an advocate in my corner. And even though my earthly dad may not be in my life, I do have a heavenly father and he does love me. And I'm not fatherless because I'm fathered by the one who actually made me. My mom may have given birth to me, but she did not know my every part. She did not knit me in my mother's womb. God did that. And he has a plan for me, regardless of what someone has said, whether they thought I was a mistake or whether they thought that this shouldn't have happened, that I have a purpose and a plan, and I do have a father, even though my earthly dad may be absent. And so out of that, I just had this, I was on the beach in Punta Cana Princess with my wife in 2014. I began to, Lord, what do you have? What's on your heart? And I started drawing up this thing. and it became what we call now the Teen Dream Center. And so I have been running that. Part of that was ran out of Crosspoint, and now it's been on its own as its own nonprofit for 4 years, where we do three things. We do mentorship, discipleship, and purpose. Every kid in our program gets a one-on-one mentor, an advocate in their corner, someone to love them, to help them see and also learn things that maybe their family never taught them. Little things like how to change a tire, to also how to hear the voice of God, how to study the Bible. We also do discipleship, where we do Bible studies in homes, because there's something about when a kid goes into a home, at home, at their own home, they don't want to be there. But when they go to a house of peace and they can be with a group of people that they call their family, that's not blood, they catch things that they realize that they actually want their life to be about. And so we do mentorship, discipleship, and then purpose. We have a coffee company through Frothy Monkey, and they work and make $14 an hour. And we do subscription coffee that we send to people's doorsteps. And also there's churches that use our coffee on Sunday morning to help our kids with the job skills that they need to be successful now and also in the future. So our whole program, I went from a big student ministry where we do worship and teaching and then go home, to now everything revolves around the mentor relationship, the one-on-one relationship, to help a kid in his life in this way that we're talking about, so that they can really actually have personal, interpersonal connection with someone, so that they know that they're not actually alone.
Well, you know, Ketrick, what have you learned about the importance of listening to these young people? Because you have already shared with us, your mom loved you enough to perm your mullet. So you didn't have, you know, the same growing up experience that you're describing for a lot of these kids. And, you know, I see this a lot, that kids just really want to be seen. They want to be heard.
That's right.
They want to be known, and they want to be loved, and they are looking for that. And I think one of the things that's really challenging for parents, for grandparents, for mentors, is that the world is looking to fill that void. There are all kinds of entities, organizations, agendas, you name it, online that are seeking our kids. And they either, most of them either want to exploit them for financial gain, for abuse. They want to impact their consumer choices. They want to recruit them to their cause, you know, those kinds of things. It's not people or causes or places or agendas or organizations that really have a vested interest in the health and the heart of those youth. And how does listening to them make such a difference? And how have you found success in getting them to actually talk to you?
So one of the things that I would say in the last, I said it was 8 years, it's actually almost been 10. I forget the timeline. But what I learned early on is I feel like I could write the book, What Not to Do Your First 2 Years of Inner City Ministry, because you walk in thinking that you know why someone's doing what they do, but I didn't have a lens of living in survival, so I didn't understand. And so it came very quickly to me jumping to like, oh, I know why you do that, to then beginning to go, you know what? I'm going to ask, tell me why you do that. And I'll give you an example. This is the first big epiphany of what happened. When you're walking out life with kids that come from survival, how messy it can be, but in the end, how great it can be. And so there's a kid that one time, this is just real life, there's a kid on his Instagram, he was holding a gun that was in our program. And I'm like, what is going on? And this is how crazy it can be in the inner city, because when you don't know you have a father that's your defender, you will defend yourself in any way that you can. And so this kid, I went to him and I was, you know, in my head, I'm like alarmed. And instead of saying, oh, I know why you're doing that, I just said, hey, can you tell me why you were doing that? And he said, the guy that came into our neighborhood that shot my brother 7 times drove through the neighborhood this week, and I just needed him to know that I was protecting myself. That blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And that was like a moment for me to realize, when you don't know you have a father that's defending you, you will go to the extreme to defend yourself, because you don't know what to trust. So you just trust in whatever you can do. And that was the process, is tell me what I don't know. But then for me, now let's talk it out. Now let me walk out and give you truth of how to walk in this and start to trust a God that has your back, that God that will defend you. And let's talk through those conversations. But it can be it's just us getting perspective from them first and then helping them figure out how to walk that out in their current environment. But it really is sitting and listening. And then in real time, God, how do you want me to walk this out? And really partnering with God in that conversation to say, what is your heart for them? How do you want me to love them? Mm-hmm. And watch as God transforms their life, through that interaction of you listening and then saying, okay, God, now what? And I think that's been the biggest part for us in the mentor program, is to help everyone involved learn how to hear God's voice and do what he tells you, because they will be a success if they can do that. But it comes through relationship with other people that can help them model that for them.
Well, you know, you said a lot of really important things there that I think we should stop for a minute and make sure that we catch, because one of the things that you talked about was that these situations are messy. They're very complex. And sometimes I think we tend to be overly simplistic when we don't have a shared life experience. If you haven't lived in the inner city or whatever, you kind of come in with this savior mentality, like, oh, you have a problem of this. Well, I have a solution of this. And let me just come in here and fix this for you. And I know we see that. I struggle with that as a nurse. You know, I want to go in and rescue everybody or save everybody. I know ministry can have that kind of nuance as well. But especially today, Kedrick, the world is a lot more complicated than it used to be. And there's a lot more competition for that narrative. There are a lot more voices that are speaking into the lives of these kids. I mean, they can go online, and it scares me a lot to think about kids like this, any kid with any vulnerability, getting online to social media and being pulled into an algorithm. They watch one video, listen to one voice, and then all of a sudden, 2 hours later, they've got a whole new network of people who are speaking into them. But you know, one thing that has not changed, Kedrick, I'm convinced of this, is that relationships are key, just like you said. That is the trump card. That is the thing that is going to rise to the top every time. And the truth is going to come out on that. So how do you build relationships with these young people? You talk about even something Wednesday night family dinners, things like that. What are ways that we can build relationships with people who have different experiences that maybe we haven't lived or walked through?
So I think it's not just like field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. I think you just minister to what presents, what is right in front of you that you can like God can use you in. Cause that's what happened to us, is the student ministry just transformed within 9 months. I was just like, God, there, you got some answers to this stuff that I don't have answers for. How would you do this? And I remember one of the kids coming to my house and eating dinner at my dinner table. At that point, it was with our first child, and we're just doing life. We're just eating dinner, putting the kids to bed, all the things. And me and my wife, Ashley. And I remember that kid saying to me one day, he said, at my house, we don't eat at a dinner table. Sometimes if we get a meal, it's once a day, and sometimes that's just cereal. And I turned to that kid and I said, we will do family dinner every week when we start the Teen Dream Center. And that's become one of the staples every week, whether it's in homes or whether it is at TDC, the Teen Dream Center. We sit at tables and we eat together and have a hot meal together to look across the table and see one another. Because it is not just a lost art in the inner city. It's a lost art in our world. Our world is so busy and our families are so busy going to games, going to practice, doing the stuff, doing all the things that say is successful, and they're missing out on the interpersonal eye-to-eye, looking at you across the table and seeing into your life, not just a fake image on a screen, but seeing you eye-to-eye. And I think that is just carving out time to be consistent. The way that you are a success in our world today is being consistent with another person sitting across from them. And that's what I say to every mentor that's in the TDC. Your success rate is not based upon if a kid goes to college. Your success rate isn't based upon any of these metrics that we give the world. Your success rate is that you are consistent, because Jesus was the most consistent thing in our inconsistencies. And we can model that through through being that for another person because they've never seen consistency, especially in the inner city. They've never seen someone say, I value you and I'll make time for you.
You know, there's, oh my goodness, this is so much powerful truth. One of the things I love about family dinner is that that is research based. We know that kids who have family dinner 1 to 3 nights a week, you can look at different nights, but consistently, just like you're saying to your point, kids that have family dinner consistently are much less likely to have mental health problems. They're less likely to engage in risk-taking behaviors. I mean, the list just goes on and on. They do better in school. And so being able to provide something that simple is so important. And, you know, Kedrick, I think about all kinds of kids with all kinds of vulnerabilities. So maybe it's inner city kids like you're talking about. I think about kids who have been in my own house. I think about this one particular time, one of my children had a friend over and we were going to watch a movie together, and it was normal for us. Friday nights were our movie nights, and so we all piled together on the couch. Everybody put their phone away because that's our family agreement. And I remember this kid just standing there kind of staring awkwardly like, what is going on? What are you doing here? And we said, pile in, like jump on the couch, like get some popcorn. This is what we do. And that child was just really, they said, we never do anything in the same room in my house. Like we're just always on our own. And so I think about those simple things that are so powerful. And at family dinner, they don't want a steak dinner. They want you to take a stake in their life. That's really what they want in being consistent. And you're so right, Kedrick, in living at the speed of a smartphone, we've got to slow down and take time to cultivate those connections. And they're not instant. It takes time to build trust and to build those relationships over time. But we're coming up against another break, Kedrick. But when we come back, I want to talk about specifically the impact of male mentors and volunteers. That can be really hard to find. I'm sure you can... You've already talked about a lot of kids in your ministry who don't have a father in their life. Even in church ministry, we have all the moms, you know, making all the snacks and driving all the cars and doing all the things. It's much harder to get dads involved. But when we come back, let's talk about the importance of men stepping up to the occasion and developing relationships that will help these kids to have connection and point them to truth. We're talking with Kedrick Newell. We'll be right back on the other side of this break. Don't go away.
Here's Dr. Ligon Duncan from the American Family Studios documentary, The God Who Speaks.
I think the most striking thing to me about the Bible is that it not only reveals God to me, it is God speaking to us, revealing himself to us. But in the process of teaching us about himself, he reveals so much about who we are. I often tell people that one of the ways that I know that the Bible is true is the way that it diagnoses my sin. I'm often reading through a passage and I'm thinking, this was written 3,000 years ago, and yet it perfectly diagnoses the state of the sin of my heart. The only way that can happen is if my Creator is actually the author of the book.
Visit thegodwhospeaks.org.
Tell me, is he a God?
Welcome back, friends. Yep, I just had to let that little part play. I love that part. Tell me, is he good? Yes, he is good. And we are talking about the goodness of God today in the life and ministry of Ketrick Newell. He is a youth minister, author of Liar Liar, Mullet on Fire, and he runs a ministry for teens in inner city in Nashville. And Ketrick, we were just talking, having this, I feel like we're right in the middle of this really important conversation about mentors for kids who need them today. And I want you to tell us about the importance of males, of men, stepping up and stepping into the spaces of the lives of these kids. What does that look like? What are the challenges?
Well, I think there's a massive, if we believe it to be true that you find your identity through the males, through the dads, our identity is found in that from our fathers, when our father speaks into our life and our father tells us who we are. And yes, God can fill in those gaps, right? Like, God is the best gap filler we know, right? And me being a father to my kids, God will fill in the gaps where even I miss it. As good of a dad as I am, I'm going to miss it sometimes. But there's something about the absence of a father. I've heard many kids in the inner city tell me, my mom is amazing. She's awesome. But there's certain things that my mama can't teach me that my dad can. And they feel that. That's their conclusion, not mine. That's what they're saying to me in the process of living in these fatherless homes. And what I believe is if the enemy can get us to not know our own identity, and we raise our kids in a house where we don't know our own identity as fathers, by the time our kids graduate out of our home, and maybe we find it later in life, that would be the best trick the enemy could play, because now we're raising a generation of girls and guys that don't know their identity because their own fathers never did. And so we're living in that now. I think if men just don't know that they have what it takes to do this life and help bring identity into the lives of other kids. And so I see it, and I'm sure just like you said before the break, you see it in the mom's desire to be there, the mom's, you know, just the way moms are built, the mama in them. We need the men to stand up and realize that they have the ability to speak into kids and that they have what it takes in themselves. And I sense that, like, in our ministry, there's way more ladies than there is men. And we're always looking for men mentors. And I think it comes from this blow of, like, they don't know that they have what it takes. And we need men's strength to stand up. I say this to my kids all the time, to my oldest 9-year-old. I say this to him, and I love watching them kiss my little 6-week-old daughter now, because I said to them when they were little, I said, you know, I told my oldest, use your strength for your brothers. Use your strength for your brothers. And that is what we get to do, is to bring our strength into a scenario and not live a life of taking, but live a life of giving and live a life of surrendering to help others fully become who they're meant to be. And that's the big thing that I see. And I can see it rising in our men, is just letting them know what I see in them, letting them know who they are, not seeing them for their history, but speaking into who their destiny is. And I think that's a lot of what we get to do at TDC, that it's, for the men, I'm just like red hot on when I see something going, that looks like God. That right there, that's the part of God that looks like God in you, right? Like, my nose looks like my dad because I come from my father. That part of you looks like God. That compassion you have, that strength that you have, that thing right there, that is the part of God that you need to set a fire to and do that here. And it's awesome to watch our mentors rise to that. Oh my gosh, I didn't know that was a gift, right? Like, they'll say that all the time. And it's because no one's told them. And if no one tells you that something's a gift, you will use it in the wrong way and it will begin to be a curse, and you'll never actually use it for its destiny purpose that God intended you to use it for.
Well, you know, when you talk about fathers shaping identity, that is largely true. So when we have mothers, and I think about my own children, Ketrick, when I give them a compliment, if I tell my daughters they're beautiful, they're like, oh, thanks, Mom. They feel nurtured. They feel loved. They feel supported. They feel like, of course, you're going to say that. You're my mom. If I tell, you know, my sons, if I give them a compliment, they feel good about themselves. But if my husband tells my daughters then that it gives them a compliment about, you know, just like, oh, you look nice tonight, then it's, oh, I am beautiful. I am, you know, they give a compliment to my son. Oh, I am. And they take on that character attribute. And I think some men don't realize the weight that it has because, of course, it goes the opposite way, too. And I think, you know, I've talked with my husband about this before. I've said, you don't understand the weight of your words. The weight of just a little bit of negative from you goes a lot further because he'll say, you know, look, you will gripe at them about their studies. You're much harsher on them than I am. I'm like, I know. But with you, a little goes a very long way. And that can be scary, you know, for the negative things.
Yeah.
But it's also empowering for the positive things. And I think about what you're saying, Ketrick, and presenting this narrative to kids who need identity. What are we supposed to tell these kids who are very underserved, very underprivileged, who have broken relationships or no relationships with their dad? Like, oh, hey, here's some self-help books and you can become a better person and you can rise up and you can be better. And, you know, you have hope in yourself and or you have a God who loves you, who has created a plan for you, who knows intimately everything that you're going through, who can use it for your good and for his glory. You have a greater purpose. I just don't see how we give them real hope without that message. So what practical things would you encourage people who are thinking, okay, well, you know, I've been thinking about volunteering, but I haven't really done it. Here's your sign, guys. Here's your sign. So what do they do with that, Ketrick?
Well, I think the biggest part is before, I think fear is the last resort that the enemy has for us to step through that. And on the other side of the fear is the greatest things that God has in store for us. And so I can tell you that God is calling his men to rise up, just like his women too. But right now we're talking about the men, you know, and that side of it. And I think, but God is tweaking the hearts and he wants them to step into it and trust. And the thing that I know is that if the enemy can't get you to deny what God wants you to do, he'll get you to delay it. Some of you are going to hear this and you're going to go, oh my gosh, I've just been talking about this. I really need to get involved. Yeah. I really need to get into the youth group on Wednesday night. I need to get involved in that ministry, that nonprofit. I've been saying this. And you look back and you're like, oh, I thought it was a year. It's been five. And what you don't understand is God can do some things through you and also in you at the same time, but he needs your obedience. So you may not, none of us are there. None of us are fully there, right? When I get here, then I will, right? It's that when then. And it's like, it's such a lie. Once you get involved and you get into a healthy community, not only will the kids be changed, but you will also be changed. God isn't a God that just wants to use you. God isn't into the using business. I used to use that word all the time. And I begin to go, I don't want to use that word anymore. God wants to partner with you. And while he's the best multitasker we know, he can work in you as you're working and he can work on them. And that's a big deal. Don't disqualify yourself from the obedience of saying yes, because you're not there yet. None of us are there. When I started the Teen Dream Center, I wasn't there. Like I said, I could write the book, What Not to Do Your First 2 Years of Inner City Ministry, because I didn't know what I didn't know, but I had an obedience to God saying, I will do it, right? And so I think for the men, I would say to them, step through the fear, no more delaying or denying, do the thing that God wants you to do. And 1 year from now, stepping into that, you will become the man, a man that you didn't think was possible. And so will the people that you're impacting along the way.
You know, this has really been my husband's journey. He has always worked with young people. And even right now, he is mentoring a group of boys that they start off in sixth grade and they go with them all the way through high school. And it's really amazing. That's a story for another time. But his dad does the same thing. And, you know, his dad had never done anything like that before, came out of corporate America, big vice president, you know, and thinking, but I feel so ill-equipped. Like, what in the world am I going to do? I don't know that much about the Bible. Like, how am I going to teach that? Well, let me tell you something. People who are newer in their faith, man, they are going to do a lot better job on their homework and learning that lesson and asking questions and making sure that they're teaching the right thing sometimes than people who have been in it a long time. But really what they need is relationships. So I think about this one time, Ketrick, that my father-in-law had his group of boys and he told me, he said, you know, their manners are atrocious. Like these boys, that one of them, you know, just to go there, let me just be really honest with our listeners. This kid ate so much that he threw up in a trash can and then ate more, you know, was like, I think I'm going to eat more. So he said, look, I'm going to take these boys out to eat. We're going to go to a restaurant. We're going to get dressed up. We're going to learn how to speak kindly to the waitress and we're going to go. And so he did. He took them out to the Olive Garden, came back. And I said, well, how did it go? And he said, it was such a success. Not one of them ate spaghetti with their face. And I feel like that is progress, you know, because these were junior high boys. That's what they do. But it's so much in the relationship, in being there with them and showing up for a basketball game or finding out what they're doing at school and asking, how did that test go? That's where really the discipleship happens. That's where that connection happens. And so what would you say to people who are thinking, okay, all right, I'm going to take that next step. What would be a next step that they could do just to show up where they are?
Well, I would say a lot of, like in our world, I think the big distraction is all the things we see online. We think we should get involved in those things over there. And I think it's a big distraction where God's saying, who's right in front of you? When you look at the way that God moved along the earth, God came and he spoke to his people about a people that is right there that they could impact, that they had, that was right on their back, you know, backyard, if you will. And I think that's just the thing. Don't get distracted by all the things in the world because it's so easy to do so. I would say to you, just say yes and step into it and then watch God as you get to partner with him and see what he does, because that is where your best life is when we are partnering with God in moments. I say this all the time since we're talking, you said throw up earlier and all that. I think courage is sometimes being scared and peeing your pants and showing up with pee pants, right? Like, I think that is actually courage. And I think that's what happens. And I think all of us that do that, we will see something on the other side that's great. The last thing I'll say is this. Abraham, a lot of times we want, there's either the Noah plan or the Abraham plan. And I think sometimes we want the Noah plan. God, give mm-hmm. me all the details first before I build the boat, and then I'll go build the boat. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times what we get is the Abraham plan. Go to a place, I'll show you. And some of you are standing there and have been standing there for a while saying, God, and God isn't, you're not waiting on God. God is waiting on you to take the step, because he said, if you'll just start walking, I will show you. And that's what I would say to some of the people that are listening today.
Well, Ketrick, you are available for speaking. How can our listeners connect with you, find out more, book you for speaking, or find out about your book or your ministry? Where can they find you?
Yeah, but you can find my book on Amazon. But also the best way to get in contact with me is just at Ketrick on social platforms. Instagram is really the big one that I spend most of my time on. And so just at Ketrick, like metric with a K, at Ketrick. And I would love to hear how today's impacted them. And if I can ever come and be of a service to maybe your Christian school, or maybe your even a youth group. I do tons of D-Nows, weekend retreats, camps, and conferences. So that would be awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Ketrick, for sharing with us. Thank you for founding the Team Dream Center. Teen Dream Center. Thank you for your mission to help people break free from the lies of their past, by encountering the radical and powerful love of Jesus, experiencing his truth and grace, and learning to hear the voice of the Holy Spirit and fully live the life that God has for them. Ketrick talks about replacing the lies we believe with God's truth, investing in the next generation, embracing God's purpose for your life. And for your life, for those of you who are listening, you know that I pray the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you and give you peace. And I pray that you listen to his voice for that nudge that you need to get involved. There is a kid out there somewhere who needs the help and hope that you can give. Well, listen, we'll see you right back here next time with more hope for healthy families. And I can't wait. See you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.